From the studios of their respective lounge rooms, a team of pajama-clad TV tragics ready to slice, dice, and dissect the best and worst of what's on the box. It's TV Binge Box.
Greetings, TV lovers. I'm Dan Bennett. Welcome to a brand new TV Binge Box, our 30th episode even. Thanks for coming along for the ride. It's a very big hello to our team, Steve Mulk.
I am still here.
You are still here, and we're very glad about it. Joe Casamento, good to see you.
We are all still here.
We are all still here. Hello, Stephen Brooke.
Wow, very existential.
Hello, Dan. Hello, team.
Now, gang, I have been studying all week for Brookie's quiz. I am determined to win this time. Victory will be mine. I am.
Have you ever won before, Dan?
No, Mulk won the first one, Joe
you
won the second
due,
one.
I know, but I just on a positive note for you, Dan, I did find when I was cleaning up my desk yesterday our scorebook from last time.
Oh, yes.
Which Allegra kindly wrote down. You were actually only 10 points behind me, the winner. Well, the winner on 150. You were 140, and Mulk was 110.
I
think I should apologise in advance because I've crumbled and I've made it a lot easier than last time.
That's good. Yeah, that's great.
That's all more fun.
That is coming up a little bit later. So is Group Binge, but let's kick things off with...
Clap or slap.
And a slightly different clap or slap this week because we've got so much to get through. I'm only allowing you one show each, okay? One show.
Okay.
Clap or slap. That's it. No cheating. Brookie. What have you chosen?
Well, this is at the cinema, but also Way of the World Netflix. So I've had a little mini break this week. I went up to Mulkland, the Central Coast, to the Avoca Picture House.
Marvellous. Thanks for dropping in, by the way.
I believe you were once in my very own building, Mulk, and didn't drop in and say hello.
So disappointing.
Ouch.
Yeah. Anyway. And I saw Rebecca, which is a book that I first read when I was at school, and this very famous Laurence Olivier film from 1939-1940, which won Best Picture, thanks to Alfred Hitchcock. So I was a bit wary about this super modern remake, which has been, it's still set in the same era, and Rebecca is the story of a mousy woman who is a housemaid or a lady's companion played by Lily James who meets the most stunning, wealthy, handsome man whilst she is being a lady's companion in Monte Carlo. And guess what? He wants to marry her. So that is Max de Winter, and he whisks her off to Manderley, which is his house, his estate in southern England in sort of Dorset or Cornwall.
This sounds like that Serbian porn film that Joe found on Netflix already.
I've got to tell you, the story of Rebecca has inspired a lot of people over the decades. Anyway, long story short, it's got some very tepid reviews, mainly criticising Armie Hammer for playing Max de Winter. Kristen Scott Thomas plays Mrs. Danvers, the freaky woman who is in charge of Manderley and cannot let go of Rebecca, who was Max's first wife, who died, but her presence is felt everywhere around the house. So it's a very old-fashioned story, but it's very modern themes about gaslighting and anxiety. Tepid reviews. I thought it was terrific, actually. And I'm someone who, A, really liked the book, and B, liked the 1940s version. It's much more honest and true to the original intent, I think, than Alfred Hitchcock's one, which had a bit of a Hollywood ending. So highly recommending it if you like a bit of romance / psychological thriller. Guys, check it out. A big clap from me.
Fantastic. Ah. And is that the one?
And it's available on both platforms.
Yeah, so it's dropping on Netflix this week, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's kind of a weird experience being in a cinema and suddenly the giant Netflix multicolored logo appears.
Boom, boom.
And then you are reminded that it is, in fact, on a streaming service. And I wonder if it's one of those classic things that's happened everywhere in 2020. It was going to be a big theatrical release.
Guess what?
Yep. COVID happened and they've decided to have a little bit each way. So I think it's on limited cinema release if you are... living in Australia, obviously not in Victoria, for a period, a bit like that Robert De Niro flick that Netflix put in the cinema for about a fortnight.
Right.
So, yeah, check it out. I think it would be equally good in the cinema or at home.
All right. Great. Excellent.
Fabulous.
Thank you, Brookie.
I'm going to do that for my Chop Top chats, and I will let you know whether I'm with the critics or with you, Brookie.
Nice.
Look good. At you go, Joe Casamento.
You had me at Lily James, really. You didn't have to get
She's
me too
fabulous.
Far.
She's fabulous, yeah. All right, while you're at it, Joe, what have you got for us in your clap or slap?
Oh, and talking about period dramas and all the like, this is a sort of old one that I'd seen around on the SBS On Demand app. Mind you, it is now gone because I tried to put my parents onto it and they only have that app. They have the free apps and it's gone. So it's now on Stan. I am talking about Harlots, the three-season British drama, which in the second and third seasons has Liv Tyler. Look, it has intrigued me for a long time. I'm sure you would have seen the actual picture for it. I guess it's the sort of titillating subject matter, the lavish costumes, the period drama, the 18th century London world that they inhabit is what sort of had always piqued my interest, but I'd never actually got there. So when I did, I have been up every night for the last month devouring the three seasons. It is really quite fabulous. I don't know why it has not won more awards. And it has 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Wow. I just checked out.
Wow.
So
that's
pretty amazing. The critics do agree with me, it seems, in this instance. It's the world of the bordellos in 18th century London. We're talking about the cutthroat business of two brothel owners who are actually madames, or I didn't know this word for them, but what they were called back then, which is bawds, as they are referred to in the town. There is Margaret Wells, who has two beautiful daughters who she basically prostitutes out to the highest bidder.
Wow.
And she has a black husband and a son, so very forward for Georgian England, and her great rival, Lydia Quigley, who is absolutely ghastly, like the most revolting villain you could come across. And I refuse to believe she hasn't won awards, the actress that plays her. It's this great rivalry. There's murder, there's sex, there's a bit of nudity, there's fabulous costumes, there's historically accurate bits. There's, a lot of threatening of the noose and the law and order and men doing all the awful things they do. It's shocking. It's a little bit of that new style of The Great, although it was made before The Great, right, or The Favourite. Mm-hmm. But I found it less silly in a way. It's equally as over the top, but it's written so well that it really balances, I think, the substance and the flair. And it's just so cheeky, and it explores everything from religion to sex and how basically women were stuffed in those days. Like, really, unless you were opening your legs or you were born into it, you had absolutely no power at all. It's, as I said, shocking, funny, gritty, and fabulous on so many levels.
Wow.
I just loved it so much more than I was expecting to. A massive thumbs up from me. I am talking about Harlots, which you can catch now on Stan if you are that way inclined.
Brilliant. That's another one to add to my list. I'm going to have a very busy weekend.
Jeepers.
You are.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Joe. Mog, you're up.
Yes. Thank you, Dan. For my one show, I've picked four.
Yes.
But I'll be really quick. Really quick on the first three. I finished Lovecraft Country this week on Fox Showcase.
Yes.
It's weird. I watched the Insight episode that was all about 15 Minutes of Fame. That had a whole bunch of people like Gabby Milgate and Abby from The Bachelor. It was a really interesting take on people who both by choice and out of their choice were thrust into the limelight. Incredible. Catch that SBS On Demand. I have started watching Seduced, the four-part documentary series on the Nexium cult. But specifically about India Oxenbold.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
The daughter of Catherine Oxenbold. Oxenbold. They were both in it. And Catherine is a big feature in The Vow, the 9-part doco that runs 4 episodes too long.
Yes. I'm struggling.
Loving it. Yeah, yes. It's hard work. The first episode of Seduced is great. I can't wait to see the next three. P.S. Keith Raniere gets sentenced next week.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and so The Vow has been renewed for a season 2, which will follow the trial.
Oh, wow. My God.
It'll be good, but don't drag it out, please, God. The thing that I wanted to talk about for my clap or slap is another Netflix-only film.
Yes.
Aaron Sorkin's Trial of the Chicago 7.
Yes.
Now, I to my great sort of, you know, probably pain, didn't know it was a Sorkin take on this story and knew nothing about the story going in. I just thought, oh, well, this looks good.
Monk, you obviously don't listen to me on the BRR show.
I don't pay any attention to anyone unless I'm facing them. That said, mesmerized. And then at the end of it, when I saw that Aaron Sorkin wrote and directed it, everything just made sense. Gobsmacking.
Courtroom drama, right?
Just amazing. Yeah, and because they tell the story of the riot, that the reason the seven were arrested in flashback through the trial, the fact that it even, like at one point, I just thought, this is too absurd. This cannot be based in fact. Mm. And then I went and read about it and, like, they have cobbled together some stuff to shorten periods of time, but that the fact that the African-American man who was kind of forced into this that wasn't being represented was bound and gagged in the film for a short period of time, in real life, for 3 days in court. Like, wow. What a travesty of justice.
Yeah.
Just outrageous. Must watch all the claps. I don't care what you think of Sorkin. This was delightful.
Yep.
An amazing 2 hours.
I was with
has you. He been faithful to the story, or has he Sorkinized it, if you know what I mean?
Yes, no. All of the major points are there. And if anything, I think he has probably given the character that... what's his name?
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Sacha Baron Cohen. Abby is his character. Probably given him some really great, you know, long-winded pieces. But of course, everything that happens in court has connection. They can just lift whole swathes of what was said. So, you know, for him to be able to use that and extend that into, you know, supposing what happens in their conversations and, you know, having interviews and read stuff about, it's an incredible tale. And it happened like just last century.
And can you believe it was written and made 2 years ago and with black... Oh, yeah, so it's so relevant right now.
Wow.
Yeah. Can I just... I watched it on the weekend too. And just to offer a counterpoint, I agree. I thought it was superbly written and acted and directed, and technically all of those things were wonderful and couldn't be faulted, really. Yes. I thought it was too long. For me, the stakes of the story weren't high enough to hold my interest for the entire 2+ hours. I found myself like emptying the dishwasher and doing other things and having it on in the background in parts because it went on
too
long.
That's the problem with not going to the movies, Stan.
Yes, that's right.
You can't unload the dishwasher.
I need to be locked in a dark cinema.
You can't undo the dishwasher.
I could not unload my dishwasher watching Rebecca, which was 2 hours as well.
Right. All right. Thank you
for
that,
Mark. It
was really
great. I commend it to
you. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, check it out. All right, the show I want to talk about this week is The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix.
Oh, I'm out.
This is the follow-up to last year's smash hit, The Haunting of Hill House, which I thought was absolutely exceptional. And I am not a fan of supernatural shows, okay? They are not my bag at all. But at its heart, it was just a really compelling and complex family drama, and that's what I loved about it the most, as well as some incredible acting and filmmaking, of course. So I've been waiting for the follow-up with much anticipation. Bly Manor is not a sequel. The Haunting series is an anthology show, a different story each year, but with some of the same people involved. And we see some of the same cast pop up here, including returning lead Victoria Pedretti as Danielle Danny Clayton, a young governess hired by a man to look after his niece and nephew at the family country house after they fall into his care following the death of their parents. Arriving at the Bly estate, Danny begins to see apparitions that proceed to haunt the premises.
Uh-oh.
It looks exactly as you'd imagine, big, creepy, old-looking house in the middle of nowhere in country England, two equally creepy little kids, including, fun fact, actress Emily B. Smith, who voices Peppa Pig. She gets to show off her acting chops here. And to be honest, I think I prefer her as Peppa. Like the rest of the cast, she's so OTT. They are all just overacting their little socks off. But in defense to them, they're working with some material that is some of the most overwritten drivel I've seen on television in a really long time. I watched the first episode and couldn't believe how bad it was. I reached out over social media to others who had seen it all to see if it got any better. Some said, no, not at all. Others said yes eventually by the end. Ooh, well, my life is too short to bother with 8 episodes of something that eventually gets better. I watched a couple more eps and then tapped out. I was so disappointed that it was such a terrible follow-up to what was a great first series of an anthology franchise. Ooh. So without a question, The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix is a massive slap from me.
Thumbs down.
Yeah. Thumbs down. So they've been our highlights, or lowlights, as it may be, of the week. How about you, dear listeners? Let us know. We're at @TV_BingeBox on Twitter or TV Binge Box Podcast Gang on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. Time now for a show I'm so excited to talk about. Yes, it's...
Group Binge.
Joe, you chose brilliantly this week. It is a show that has everybody talking right now.
Well, when I suggested we watch this, little did I know how juicy it was going to be and how much there would be to dissect and what destination TV it would actually be. I'm talking SAS Australia, of course, Seven's explosive new reality show, which blew everyone else out of the water on its first night. I think the ratings were like over a million, weren't they? Little MasterChef and
Nationally,
Block.
Yes.
Didn't have a chance. 17 celebrities, athletes and reality stars, as we know, are challenged to compete an SAS selection course while being cursed and yelled at and abused by ex-special forces soldiers. They're launched backwards out of helicopters into freezing lakes and forced to poo in a dunny with only half a door. It makes I'm a Celebrity get me out of here like a trip to a day spa, didn't it? It did. It's like wimps.
Big problems for that show next year, I think.
What are you worried about? It's based on the UK's equally brutal SAS Who Dares Wins, which was called a sadistic lesson by The Guardian. And only a few minutes in, my daughter Allegra was yelling at the man on the screen, and she's very, she's a netballer. She's fierce, my Allegra. And she was screaming at the man, "Why are you being such a, you know, there's not a freaking war going on." She was really raged. She was angry from the get-go. She doesn't like being bossed around, as I said. And she pointed out there was no SAS women. Is that a thing? Or is that just not on this show? Anyway, it did force me to delve into a few things. From the minute when a balaclavaed Roxy, when it's taken off her and she has a small little grin on her face and she's yelled at for the smirk, we know these men mean business. Clearly they've forgotten this is TV, or as Hughesy said on Instagram, why are those grumpy English blokes yelling at Aussie celebrities? The war is over. They need to calm the F down. There are so many things people are talking about, as you said, Dan. So I'm going to start with you. I know you loved it.
Sure.
I can't go past. I think the opening night clanger clearly was the last few minutes. Chappelle. Wow.
Yep.
She's interrogated by a soldier after, can I just say, and I found this quite confronting, being balaclavaed again and ushered into this small room by three very overpowering men. I just felt that was really uncomfortable TV for me, and I wondered whether it's actually appropriate, and we can discuss that in a second. But she reveals the depth of the psychosis she experienced at jail. Yeah. At one point, she talks about losing her mind, hallucinating, saying, I couldn't eat. I don't eat meat anymore because my hallucinations were so vivid, she says, that I thought I was eating my dad's human flesh. She really went into a state. The admissions and the entire psychology of understanding what she endured during that time in jail took this show immediately to a different sort of stratosphere for me. It was almost like I was watching 60 Minutes with an intense interviewer who didn't know her history, so doesn't have a journalistic background, or said he didn't know his history, just Googled her. But I also felt sad. I had a huge mixed emotions. Felt sad watching that Chappelle, who's trying to move forward, having to relive all that again. I don't know. I was terribly confronted, as I said, by the three men. The tactics seemed really over the top. Do you think they were, or is that what makes great TV? And how much duty of care do we have for the contestants who sign up willingly, Dan?
Wow. Okay.
Big question for you.
There's a lot to think about there. I found that last 10 minutes that was
intense. Yeah,
compelling television by any measure. It felt to me that it's more raw and real than I've seen her in any interview, 1, really, that she's ever done. She's opened up more than she has to any journo. And you know what? I didn't actually think about the tactics that sort of brought her into the room. I think maybe you're right, but at the same time, maybe that is what allowed her to open up like she did. And it felt to me, although it was very clearly very tough for her, it almost felt, I could feel the catharsis from her. It kind of felt like she was relieved in a way to be talking about it in that manner, and to somebody who didn't have preconceived notions. He was just coming at it from a blank slate. I found out today that he's actually himself spent time in prison, so there was sort of a level of sympathy maybe inherently coming from him. And you can actually watch the entire unedited interview on 7 Plus if you want to check out more of that. It gives it a bit more context and you get to see a bit more of the full discussion, which is really interesting. But yeah, I thought that certainly was the highlight for me.
So not too much for TV. Well, Brookie, you're sort of rolling your eyes there. So I wanted to ask you something else, but you need to make a point, clearly, I can see.
I thought it was exploitative of Chappelle. I do not think all those other celebrities, we are going to see them grilled in the same way that she was. I think Seven clearly realised that there was a fascination with her, and it did. It was the 60 Minutes interview. It is exactly what they wanted, because she was, I thought, even without that, such a fascinating character, and how she interacted with the other people and introduced herself and tried to work out, there was that guy from The Biggest Loser,
Shannon.
Everyone knew who she was. She had mistaken him for someone else, but she was marked out early by the instructors on the course for having grit and determination. And I think what made it different for her was that it wasn't an interview. It was like a job interview, because they were there to assess her, and they actually complimented her right at the start and said, look, we think you've shown quite a lot of determination. So that gave her, I think, the sort of confidence, although clearly reluctant. But I don't know how much of that was necessary for her to do the course. It just, to me, particularly being in Guess What, the first episode, just kind of smacked of Channel 7 thinking, this will get the viewers in because it'll be fascinating.
I mean, she clearly has a lot of mental health issues ongoing. I heard her on Kyle and Jackie O last week, actually, and she said that she tends to lock herself in her bedroom and shut the door because she finds space too freeing. Like, she's so used to being confined that she can't actually handle even being in the lounge room sometimes.
Very briefly, I was attracted to the idea of this because I thought this is people trying to achieve something. It's not just like Love Island or some of the more superficial. But this is a really intensive course, a sense of achievement. But with some of the interviews they did with celebrities, I just thought, this is just another outlet for your self-obsession.
But it's not going to be that. I think if they went in with that idea, they certainly have learned or are learning quickly that this is not Big Brother. So, Brookie, with that being said, I wanted to move on to Roxy. She left in the first episode only a few hours in. The opening credits had barely rolled. It's turned out she had actually smashed her pelvis. She fell off a horse.
Bullshit!
Oh, you don't... that was true. Only 6 weeks before. Yeah. Now, she could have decided not to go on. But she says she would never have not respected a commitment. She showed up because she committed. She didn't want to let Seven down. I did the best I could. She clearly didn't know how tough these guys were going to be. I know Roxy. She's pretty tough. So for her to leave, I thought, God, I wouldn't have lasted 1 second in that place. But what it sort of brought out in the discussion points today is, first of all, that she was very good friends with Candace Warner, who was also her client. And I don't know if you remember back to the cricketing scandal, Roxy was the one by her side during that, during all the paparazzi photos, and managed her PR around that. They don't talk now. She said, Roxy said on air this morning, I can't smash my best friends in the face for someone's entertainment, to be berated for showing up. Well, there's something very wrong with that, and that she doesn't have a friendship with Candace anymore. And that people will, she said, people will always hit you down. I know Candace as well, and she is one tough cookie as well. Roxy sort of said, I'll always go out of my way for a friend, and a real smack in the face. She actually did do it, because during the course of the show, they do have these punch-ups. And, Malk, I do want to discuss the big one with you that I want to get to as well. But
So hold on. Can we back up, Joe? They are no longer friends because they had the fight and punched each other.
She felt, Roxy felt that there was a line between entertainment and friendship. And I guess it puts people in two camps, I think, in this show. There's the camp that take it very seriously. They're told they're training for the SAS, whatever, and they're almost pretending they're there. And that's, I think a lot of athletes can get in that mental headspace. There is also the camp that aren't going to overstep boundaries, I don't know, do things because they do realise it's TV. I guess, where is that line drawn, Brookie? You sort of answered it with when you thought Chappelle was being, you know...
Look, I have sympathy, and like you, I know Roxy a bit, and I've always been impressed by her professionalism, which I know is what the last thing that people expect, but she is a PR operative, and I have seen it. When she is working, bang, she gets it done. So I've always admired her for that, and I would not belittle or berate anyone for dropping out in that sort of circumstance, because who knows how we would react. And if she had to bash up her best friend and that went against her kind of code, or she copped a smack in the face, which she found hard to deal with, then I completely get that. And the instructor said it themselves when they were talking about Forrest Durrani. They said, look, his attitude on the battlefield is going to get someone killed, which is why they reacted the way they did. But guess what, kids? We're not
it
on a
seemed
battlefield.
Everyone wanted to take a shot at Forrest. He was the only one. Everyone would have gladly punched.
You are correct. It is a TV show. And I think it's a very interesting point that Roxy has brought up. How far are we going?
Yes, are we watching gladiators in the Colosseum?
Ripping each other to shreds, or women bashing each other up, or a man
Well,
bashing
that's
a
the
woman
next
up,
point.
Which
yes.
is also what we
yes,
got.
Yes, so AFL star Sabrina Frederick, who I hadn't come across, but she's clearly a very athletic woman, is called to pick her opponent. For those who haven't seen it, literally they are taken to a field to bash each other up. In fact, I think the guy says, you will stand toe-to-toe and punch a hole in your opponent's face. They were his words. If they hit the deck, you will follow up and you will punch them until their effing face is deep in the dirt. I mean, that's the instruction they're given. So she chooses the honey badger to fight, which I thought was quite noble, because perhaps she could see that the other girls were smaller than she was. So she actually cops it on the chin, and she chooses honey badger, who, let's not forget, was a footballer, big bloke, and he lays straight in. He doesn't flinch. He doesn't kind of wait a moment, let her get one in first. She says she happily wanted to pick the biggest challenger because she's clearly a fierce chick. And he lays into
that
her.
That was brutal.
It was brutal. This is supposed to be the Honey Badger's redemption show after the public relations disaster that was The Failed Bachelor. And he chooses to go on air and smash a woman. Okay, so what I want to ask you, Malk.
No, he didn't choose.
She chose him. Would you have done that, Malk, first of all? Would you have stepped back? I don't know. How do you handle that? You're there for the job. But is this okay television? Like, the violence.
I have so many things to say about everything you guys have just
Malk,
said.
Oh, Malk, sorry.
To answer your question directly. No, that's right. To answer your question directly, would I have punched a woman? Look, I don't know, honestly. I mean, I know my physical limits, and I would have never made it onto the show. Because
That's a cop-out.
Miss Universe is
all right, then.
Unfit people on that show, and everyone is trained a lot.
There are unfit people on that show, and then there is the Honey Badger carrying Merrick Watts, carrying Candace Warner, and that's me. Right? So that's the situation here. Yeah. I know that I would not have managed
to do any of it. Okay, silly question
for you.
Was it appropriate? And in this day and age of TV, is that the message that we really should be sending?
In the context of the show, yes. All of the complaints around, and this is my 100%, this is part A of my 100% beef around Roxy Jasenko being involved in and then bailing on this show, is that it's 2020. As you said in your introduction, this show has been on air in the UK for how many seasons? Four? Like, the internet exists. Go and watch the damn thing when you're signing up for it, so you know what to expect. If you fell off a horse and broke your pelvis, That sucks. 100%. 6 weeks is not long enough for that to heal for then you go and take part in that. Not a chance. Like,
It's a TV show. It's a TV show.
Maybe she thought she was physically stronger.
Maybe she did watch it in Britain and thought, hey, it's a TV show. I bet there's a trailer out of shot and everyone's having hot dinners.
Except that all of the marketing for the UK version is exactly how Seven have marketed it here. Plus, I'm confident that if, look, to be frank, if Roxy was her own agent in this, more fool her, all of the agents would have asked what is involved, what's the conditions, what are we getting?
And if Seven knew about the pelvic injury,
that they knew what was coming.
Should they have allowed her to go in the first place?
Look, I can't suppose. I would have actually thought that as part of an insurance covering on these celebrities, that they all would have gone through a full physical by the network.
Well, there must have been someone else that pulled out, because Chappelle has said that she was only called in 6 weeks beforehand. And the rest had been on.
You don't have 17 people on a show. There would have been 18. Someone else was in and then was out at the last minute. Who knows? Who knows why? The other beef that I have with Roxy is that nobody outside the Sydney bubble gives a rat's who she is. And TV networks keep pushing and keep trying to get her on TV, either by her promotion or whatever. And she may be. I've never seen her in real life full PR mode. I'm sure she is 100% professional, fierce as, does the job. Every time there is a camera on her, she doesn't look like it.
I don't know that it's the kind of show where you need to know who they are necessarily. I think
no, absolutely
more about,
you don't.
I still don't know who the lady was. I don't know who half those people were, particularly in
I watched a bit of Tonight. It's actually quite interesting. They've got Shane Warne's son, who's you know, a few of them are actually fringe players
and
that
Arabella
will be
Arabella, what's her face?
Arabella, yeah, they grilled her.
Mate, and she tonight gets absolutely cornered.
Yes. So back to my question though, Malk. Was it appropriate? Yeah. Is it appropriate for that kind of violence? And I don't know. Did any other of you other fellas feel strange about the girl being
snatched?
Well,
can I jump in?
They're all wearing gloves and headgear.
So you didn't have a problem with it?
I've got to say.
Oh, Malk, as if that's going to make it a walk in the park.
No, I've got to say, though, Brookie made the point, and Joe, you did too, that she chose Nick. So I think it would have been, my take is it would have been patronising to her as a strong, independent woman with a choice, which she made.
Fair enough.
To then not partake with her properly and to kind of go, oh, you poor little gentle thing, I better not.
The staff would have grilled him, absolutely punished him.
Yeah, better not partake even though you've asked me to.
So I think he was left with no choice.
Went toe-to-toe. Right.
Well, I think it was a test for the honey badger as well, wasn't it? How are you going to react? Are you tough enough? Can you fight the enemy in whatever size, shape or gender they come in?
And
I don't think the takeaway, it didn't look to me like, oh my God, violence against women in any way, given the way it was set up, given the context of the show and the fact that she made the choice.
And they did stop it in that, while the command was start, like fight and stop. And they said, that's it. Until we say stop, you keep punching. As soon as somebody landed on the ground, basically the edit shows us they called stop.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So it wasn't like a big UFC kind of smashed them into the ground, which I have huge problems with. In the context of the show, look, I think that it was absolutely right for her to choose whoever she chose. She could have chosen Merrick. She could have chosen Shannon. She had a foot on both of them. She chose Nick, I think, as much as anything, because she's a physical player. She, in her, you know, two shot, she spoke about, I'm an AFL player. It's a physical game. Mm. And, you know, I want to bring it and those sorts of things. So to pick someone like Nick Cummins made complete sense. As at the risk of a spoiler, the staff do have a conversation about the Honey Badger in the middle of tonight's second episode while we're recording, and talk about the fact that he's committed, he's involved, he's straight in, but a little bit loose in that regard, in that he doesn't hold back. And not because they talk about the whole second episode is about fear and about controlling that fear. And if you let it go unbridled, it controls you. And you need to be able to hold that together.
The point about the fights was not who won the fight. It was about what the fight revealed about their attitudes.
Character,
I've got to say, I would have put it out of there. Would any of you stuck it out?
Oh, no, I wouldn't have gone on that.
Joe, this is so weird because I just thought... You know what I thought when I watched it?
what did you think, Brookie?
I thought, I wonder how Joe would go on this show.
Amazing. Amazing.
Probably better than me, I think.
I wouldn't have got out of that helicopter, you're right. I couldn't even, I'm not going to tell you what show I was asked on, but I couldn't do it. And trust me, that was nothing compared to what these people are facing. Oh, dear. All right. So I think enough discussion points. It really is an interesting show, though, to watch. And I actually find the psychology of the SAS guys really fascinating and what they have to deal with, obviously. So it's quite unique TV. So I'm going to say a big, for me, thumbs up. I'll go to you first, Dan. You loved it.
How many out of five?
Out of five, I'll go first. I'm going to give it for solid entry to the marketplace, for being exciting, being different, being a conversation starter, getting my emotions stirred, good or bad. I'm going to give it 4.5. Good, solid 4.75 even.
Yep. I'm with you. I thought it was compelling. It rockets along, great editing. And a really interesting note that I read today, and I think I'll be looking to sort of see it unfold over the future episodes, is that within that compound where they're living, producers actually aren't allowed in. Yes. So unlike other reality shows where the producers are always sort of dropping in and, you know, giving hints about what to say and whatnot, producers aren't allowed in. So whatever it's happens in there is real. So I thought that was really interesting. I'm with you. 4.5 stars.
Brookie.
Yeah.
I found it quite a tense, uncomfortable watch.
Yep, fair, cool.
Which might be because of the rawness or the realness of it. I did feel it slightly repetitive in parts where the SAS guy said, you know, we've saved lives and taken lives. I think we heard that about 3 times. I'm only giving it 3.5. I did think it was a good show. I just, a little thing I said earlier that I wonder if it's just going to be another opportunity for celebrity introspection. We'll wait and see how it develops. But clearly, Seven are on a winner with this format. Goodness me.
True, true. All right, Malk. You've seen ahead. Does it maintain its, you know, wow factor?
Oh, yeah, I think it maintains the rage. Mm-hmm. It will be interesting to see what the ratings look like on Wednesday morning following tonight's, and to see who turns up next week. Look, there's some schadenfreudic pleasure to be drawn from this. Absolutely, I think it is the opportunity for many of the participants to remake themselves, rebuild themselves in front of the audience, the viewing audience. In 2020, the ratings that it pulled for episode one are, I think, good enough for it to be called for season two. So I'd expect that out of Seven's upfronts this week. It is, you'll either fall into one of two camps. You either think it is, you know, kind of all the things that we've said, amazing, incredible, hard to watch, an interesting challenge and the rest of it, or it's torture porn. I'm a little bit foot in both camps around it, though I did find it, like, I couldn't turn away. I had to watch it. So to that end, I am deep, deep in 4 stars on this. I think that it is a good thing, and it may actually help Seven limp to the winning line in 2020.
There you are.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. All right. Awesome stuff, Joe. Thank you. I cannot wait to see the rest of that one play out, so I will be watching each week. As for next week, we'll be group binging another show I've been really looking forward to. It's from my favourite TV writer of all time, David E. Kelly.
Uh-oh.
And he's continuing his working partnership with Nicole Kidman in the new psychological thriller, The Undoing.
Okay.
Yes.
Also starring Hugh Grant and Donald Sutherland. It follows Kidman as Grace Fraser, who the press release tells us, is living the only life she ever wanted for herself. She's a successful therapist on the brink of publishing her first book and has a devoted husband and a young son who attends an elite private school in New York City. Weeks before her book is published, a chasm opens in her life, a violent death, a missing husband, and in the place of a man Grace thought she knew, only a chain of terrible revelations.
Oh, no.
The first of 6 episodes premieres next Monday night, October 26th, on Fox Showcase.
So we only have one ep to watch.
Check it out.
Okay.
Only one ep to watch. Mm-hmm. I want to know if this series grabs you enough to keep watching. This one has a lot of buzz coming out of the States, so I'm excited to hear what everybody thinks about it. That's The Undoing, next Monday on Fox Showcase. Sounds have fun. A watch and let me know what you think so we can include your thoughts in our chat.
It will also be on Binge, Dan.
Ah, good to know for our bingies out there. All right, he can be held back no longer. I can see him bursting with anticipation, literally bursting. or something like that. It's time to let him loose once again. Yes, it is time for Brookie's quiz. Brookie, take it away.
Anyway, that's enough of that. Copyright issues.
Happy 30th anniversary.
I didn't even think about that milestone.
30. So here is the TV Binge 30th quiz.
Cheers to us.
It's in four parts. General knowledge.
Good Lord. Yes.
So it's late on a Tuesday night. Okay, yes.
Dan's just sculled his drink. Whoop, gone.
Close celebrity encounters from members of the pod.
Interesting.
Then this episode's specialist subject, Australia's greatest TV flops.
Come on.
Okay. All right. Yep, good.
And then we are traipsing through the decades from the 1960s to the 2020s. TV themes.
Okay.
Oh, amazing.
Okay. Right.
Amazing.
Good.
So the format, and you can play along at home, it's 10 points for each correct answer.
Uh-huh.
Apart from the TV themes, which are sudden death, so you can jump in for the TV themes at any time, but if you get it wrong, you lose 10 points. So I'm going to ask the questions, write down your answer, and then we'll go through the answers and award the points as we go. Are we ready for question one? Round one, general knowledge.
Born ready.
Okay, recently in America, there was a town hall meeting between Donald Trump and his supporters on the one hand and candidate Joe Biden and his supporters. On the other hand, it was highly controversial because the two town forums, which replaced the second presidential debate, were screened at the same time on different networks.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
The question is, Trump or Biden, whose town hall forum rated the best?
We're not
No. Everyone is answering
down,
this.
Just writing it down.
Everyone gets to answer this.
Okay.
Okay.
By whose measure?
Dan?
Joe Biden.
That is correct. 10 points to you.
Biden.
Mox? Okay, 10 points. Everyone's a winner.
Woo!
Okay, question two. Maria Kiriakou could be said to be the most powerful woman in Australian television. But I want to know, who does she work for?
I'm not confident.
Of the media. Dan, have you got an answer?
I do not.
Well, you can have a guess.
News Corp.
Incorrect.
I said SBS.
Joe? No. Malt, I think you might know this one.
Viacom CBS.
Yes, she is the... I mean, her official job title is President of Viacom CBS Networks, UK, Australia and Israel. Effectively... She is in charge of Channel 10.
Hell of a combo, just by the way. UK, Israel and Australia.
I know. Okay, this one I expect everyone to get correct because I actually asked you last week and if you'd done a modicum of research, you would know.
You told us not to Google it, so I didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, you've got a 50-50 here.
We're sunk.
Which country where was the first TV station in which country, US or UK?
Oh, sugar, I forget.
Brookie, when you give me an instruction, I follow it.
Thank you.
Unlike some other people.
I'm going to go with the UK.
Yeah, me too.
We all said UK.
You're all wrong.
You mean I don't listen to you?
It was in the US, little network near New York.
Amazing.
Question four. What decade was the world's first TV station first broadcasting? So, in the 20th century, I'll give you a bit of a hint. First half of the TV. So, basically, what decade did that station start broadcasting?
50s. 40s. 50s.
50s.
1940s.
Oh, no. It was the 1920s.
Holy shit. Are you serious?
Good.
I'm totally serious. Yes.
I thought the movies were
right. Okay, total change of scene.
Good. Wow.
Okay, good.
Who starred in The Simple Life?
Oh. Paris. Oh, sorry.
Wait. Two. I can't even call them actresses. Two people. Everyone.
And Nicole.
Yes. All right. Brilliant. Yeah. So everyone gets 20 points for that one.
That was a great show, by the way.
And for some reason, that popped into my head. Is it like a significant anniversary for it or something or other? Okay, another 50-50. True or false? President Ronald Reagan once appeared on an episode of Sesame Street.
Mm. I'm just going to say true because it seems silly not to be.
False.
I know he was on the sitcom In Living Colour, but I'm going to say true to Sesame Street as well.
Oh, Malk is getting the points. It is false.
Nancy appeared on Sesame Street.
Yes, Hillary did, Michelle Obama and Barbara Bush. And
the
Obama,
first ladies.
Obama did record a message for a Sesame Street gala once, but Ronnie Reagan did not appear. Okay, question 7 in this first round.
Joey sucked at this.
Or...
there is 3 other rounds still to go.
Yeah. True or false? Rose Byrne once had a starring role in an Australian soap opera.
Yeah, I said true too.
I do not know, but I've said
I know
true.
Heath was.
It is true. She had a starring role in 10's Dud Echo Point.
I didn't know what it
was. Oh, of course.
In 1995.
Yes.
I liked Echo Point.
Before she was famous. Okay, so that's our 30th episode. Let's celebrate 30 years of television. Let's go back to 1990.
It's getting hot in here. Right. Brookie's stripped off to a singlet.
Stripping
off.
Hey.
I've let my hair down.
And the adults only
celebrate. We are going to celebrate some of the greatest shows that debuted in 1990. There's Twin Peaks, there's Beverly Hills 90210, there's Law and Order, and there's Seinfeld.
Yes.
But which one of those 4 shows actually did not debut in 1990?
Oh.
Can you just say them again, please?
Seinfeld, Law and Order, Beverly Hills 90210, and Twin Peaks.
Did not premiere in 1990.
Not only one of them, all the rest of debuted in the US
in
1990.
I'm gonna
Malk,
90210.
Okay, Malk's 90210.
I'm gonna go
Joe, what are you?
The field is split.
Dan has said Seinfeld. So
we're
only
all wrong.
One of you is correct. Dan, Seinfeld debuted in 1989.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay, what do the following shows have in common? Are You Being Served? The Facts of Life? The Bill? And The Two Ronnies?
Are You Being Served? The Facts of Life? The Bill.
So The Facts of Life is the American one with Tootie in it.
Ronnie.
Yeah, I love that show.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take it all, and there you have The Facts of Life. Are You Being Served? We all know The Bill was the ITV drama. The Two Ronnies was the BBC.
What do they all have in common?
Yeah.
I'm going to stick. All right.
I've got no idea.
Okay, I've got a guess.
Dan, what is your guess?
They all ran for 9 seasons.
That is a good guess, but incorrect.
Wow.
Good guess.
Dan, that's a... Wow. I said a common actor.
Also incorrect. They all filmed special episodes or special series
in Australia.
In Australia.
Oh, curse you, Brookie, of course. Yeah.
So
Facts of Life in Australia.
Facts of Life Down Under.
Yeah, Down Under. Quickly Down Under.
Yes. Okay, now this one is a little bit personal, so just be nice to each other. In the Apple reviews of the TV Binge Box podcast, which team member has the most favourable mentions, individual
Malk.
Mentions?
Simple.
Easy.
And which team member has not been mentioned at all?
God.
I don't even believe that.
Oh, no, I did.
I've got to say Mole because everyone loves his reviews.
Everyone's been mentioned.
Yeah, no. Or I think it's okay, I think it's this like this.
Okay.
Joe and Brookie.
Oh, you, Mole. Oh, sorry. Mole, you are correct.
Is that right?
Dan and I pull one out.
Yeah.
Oh, you have been mentioned, Brookie.
No, I haven't.
Heaps in the TV Black Box podcast things, but not in TV Binge Box.
So people like my shows. See, there's a lot of Housewives fans.
They love
Joe,
you.
Joe, did you back yourself?
I did, and I put Malk.
Okay, what about for the person who's not mentioned?
I just didn't believe that, and I didn't want to hurt any of your feelings by even suggesting I would think that, so... It's just not in my nature.
Okay, well, that is the end of the first round.
Oh, gosh.
So, brutal. Joe, your self-effacing nature...
Four ticks.
...has...
So that's 40 points, is it?
You've got 40 points, that is correct. Mm-hmm. Dan, you have got 70. Oh, my goodness. Malk, you've got 80 points.
It is whaffer thin.
End of round one.
One question in it, down, DB.
Okay. Right. Now, here's the specialist subject. Same rules apply. You've got to write down your answer.
Okay.
Australia's greatest TV flops.
Oh, God. I'm going to get sunk.
Okay. How many of them did I work on?
A medico in far north Queensland works on an island on the Great Barrier Reef. This drama from 2013 on Channel 10 had shocking debut ratings of about 350,000. The show was called Reef Doctors.
Thank you.
Who was the star?
Oh, yeah.
Which famous Australian... actress.
You got it, Joe?
I've got it wrong. So, but it's the only Australian actress I can think of because you two talk about them all the time.
I was just coming up blank until you said that.
I had Reef Doctors written down.
Okay. It wouldn't be either of these. I had Rebecca or Noni, but that's because you two always talk about them. Okay.
No.
Oh, Malk's got it. Yes, the boys have got it. Lisa McHugh.
She's a Logie-loved actress.
Stank.
I know.
It was so bad.
It's extraordinary. Well, and they spent so much money on it. Okay, change of pace. I am a famous Australian former cricketer. I had a chat show on, which was canned after four episodes. Who am I?
A chat show on radio or TV? On TV?
No, it was on television.
Of course it's on television. It's not a radio podcast.
Famous Australian cricketer.
Begins with R.
R what?
RP.
No, what are you talking about? No.
I'm just trying to put Joe off. My answer's written.
I was writing down Ricky Ponting.
Don't be mean.
That's my boy.
Is it the wine guy? The wine guy that married Rachel French.
Yeah, the wine guy.
Famous Australian cricketer,
no, no, no.
Joe.
The guy that married Rachel French, who I loved on Neighbours.
More famous. Oh. More famous.
Boonie.
Booney.
More famous.
Murphy's.
More famous. Oh, Joe.
Isn't that, I give up.
The most famous Australian cricketer.
Warning.
Almost
did he have
not Don Bradman?
You talked about his son earlier.
I thought that was too obvious.
Warning.
Okay.
Thank good. Oh, Joe, I am obvious. Okay. Be obvious. Yeah.
Did he? What channel?
Okay.
Nine, obviously.
Channel nine.
Nine.
Great.
We are. On Channel 10, the year is 2012. Performers dress up in drag and head out into the bush in a reality contest TV show hosted by Hugh Sheridan for reasons known only to himself, left Channel 7 for this ridiculous program. Clearly they'd seen too many episodes of, they'd seen Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, too many times. What was the name of this show? Oh. Yep, Dan. Dan's lock it in, Dan.
Oh, what is it? What is it?
I was going to say Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Don't say that.
I think it's this. I Will Survive. That's what I have.
Yes. Okay. The boys get the points. What, Joe? Did you have an answer?
Sorry.
Come on, Dan. Okay. I've got you.
2015, one of the most expensive shows of the year, follows groups or teams who, for Channel 7, run a series of pop-up eateries around the country, and Australia was just not interested. What was the name of this cooking reality program? Channel 7, 2015.
Was Came and Went. Was that Food Fight?
No. Oh, hang on.
Not Food Fight.
Yeah.
Malk.
I've abbreviated. I've said My Restaurant Rules.
Oh, Instant Restaurant.
Kids, you've drawn a blank. It was called Restaurant Revolution.
Revolution.
Oh, that's right. Because they took the My Restaurant Rules thing and transformed it.
Can I tell you there is no shame in forgetting the name of that little stinker?
I was doing ABC radio spots once a week, every week, that whole year, and the Brisbane restaurant was across the road. It was incredible to watch. There was a line of people just wanting to get their face on television every night.
Okay, and to round off this round, we're going all the way back to 1992, which is a little bit early, but it is the most famous television flop in Australian history.
Wow.
It was a program hosted by Doug Mulray. It didn't last two episodes. It didn't even last one episode.
Yeah.
It was taken off air halfway through its first episode, when Nine proprietor Kerry Packer rang up furious and ordered it be taken off air. Can anyone remember the name of this show? Boys, what do we got here? Yeah, looks about right. Yes, okay, the boys are in. Joe, what have you got?
I didn't have it, and I'm going to confess, I just started Googling, so I don't have so much shame. Get it right then. Okay, I'm putting the phone away. Oh, I'm losing my
mind. Dan, do the honours. What was it?
Australia's Naughtiest Home Videos.
Amazing. That is
correct. All right.
Well, yeah, went off air halfway through when Cheers came on.
Yes, it was the strangest thing. It went to an ad break, did not come back.
Yep. Someone who worked with Doug, he was not what he appeared. He was actually quite a cranky man.
Yes. Wasn't he?
To work with behind the scenes.
He wasn't as cranky as Kerry Packer that night, let me tell you.
Somebody's blood boiled.
Okay, gosh, we've still got two more rounds to go.
Let's speed through.
Come on, Rookie, we're in. Everyone's loving it.
Okay, next round, Celebrity Close Encounters. Mm-hmm. Each of these following scenarios really happened to one of our pod members, which may or may not include me.
Ooh.
What you have to do, and hey, it's easy points because at least one of you
gets one
points
right
each round.
I get a point.
Yes, has to guess which of our fellow bingies this happened to.
Okay.
First scenario. I went to my first Logies when I was 17 after I'd won tickets to the ceremony on the Stan Zemanek show.
Oh, you've confused me.
Does everyone have their answers in?
Yes.
I do now.
Okay. No. And Malk, what are you saying?
I'm saying Dan Bennett.
Dan
was
said
Dan.
Dan
Bennett.
I thought Malk would be, you know, a TV fan. You would have been filling in
the
forms.
The rule of this one is that we are not getting any explanations because we would be here all night.
That's really cute, though.
Never been to a Logies in my life.
That is so cute.
I got so drunk with Manu at a Channel 7 after-party launch at the casino that I observed him when he started to perform circus tricks.
Amazing. Amazing.
I know that has to be. OK, Can you read my writing?
Oh, right. Joe says Brookie. Dan says...
Malk says Malk.
It's Malk. Okay, wrong again. Come on, Joe.
That was a fun night. That made the papers.
Yeah. I couldn't give away the fact that it made the Courier Mail because I thought that would have been a giant clue. I got frog marched out of a restaurant by security in front of Tom Cruise, Sam Neill, and Brian Brown for trying to get a photo of them.
Interesting.
Oh, it's narrowing down.
Okay.
Malk, who have you got?
Malk says Joe.
Everyone says Joe.
Me.
You totally do.
I was working. Can I just say I was sent there by my chief of staff of the Daily Telegraph at the time. It was the most humiliating experience of my life. Like mortifying.
That's amazing.
Out of all of us, you'd be the only one who would be invited around people like that.
That was the point. I wasn't invited.
I once broke the law with Simon Cowell.
Oh. Well, I feel like there's only one of us left. Brocky.
Yes, correct.
In England, no doubt.
I mean, law in of England. Averages.
Is this related to you smoking a cigarette with him?
Yes, I was indoors, which had been made illegal.
Look out.
But wait, there's more.
Ooh,
you didn't think we were just going to stop at one, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's only four of us.
Here we go. Some people had extras that they have contributed to the group.
So we were told one, Brookie.
I know, but hey, we were told one clap or slap, Malk, and what did we get?
I didn't pay attention, is what happened.
Nicole Kidman once caught me watching Big Little Lies. Oh. On an aeroplane.
I've got to say, I'm going you again, Brookie.
You're going me? Dan, what are you going?
I said Joe.
You said Joe. Oh, wow. It was, in fact, me.
Oh, look at us. We're all wrong.
So, no. You said Brookie, didn't you, Malk?
Oh, no. I said Dan. Apologies.
Oh, well, Joe said Brookie. There we go.
Yeah, correct. Sorry.
So Joe got it right. Okay. Chris Isaak once serenaded me in a hotel with his guitar singing, "Baby, I did a bad, bad thing," before asking me to do a bad, bad thing.
Number six.
That's got to be Joe.
Number six has to be Joe.
Not you, Brookie. That didn't happen with you.
It was not me. I think we've all got that one right. It was Joe.
Oh, dear. And the answer to the question,
finally,
we might ask you offline.
Last, I once jumped in a hot tub with Broadway star Christian Chenoweth.
Wicked.
Okay, Joe, what have you got?
I feel like that might be Malk. No?
Ay, caramba, Malk.
Number seven,
Dan. Oh, Dan, you're such an actor.
Dan.
I looked at your face and you just weren't giving away.
Poker face.
Well, you should be in those shows you're right about.
Poker face.
Well, I got four right. Okay, let's bring it.
You did, and the boys got six right.
So I'm out of the picture.
I mean, Malk's still 10 ahead.
Malk is still 10 ahead on 180. Dan is 170 and Joe is 90.
Oh, ouch.
Rookie, can you just mute Malk's mic? This
is where it all falls apart in this round, though, Joe.
So this is, what's the subject? What's the topic?
Is this the theme?
The TV themes from the 60s to today.
Okay. Yep, okay. I'm a dead man.
And this, we just scream out our answers, yeah?
Yes. Like, so for this one, you can call out your answers as many times as you like, but each time you're wrong, you lose 10 points.
And you just shout the answer
or
your name
first? Locked
out.
Yeah, okay.
Just go with it.
No, you can just, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Are we ready? So we're in 1960s.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And I'll give you a little hint. This is one of the longest running shows of its type in the world. and can still be heard, can still be seen, sorry, seen and heard on television today.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
Yep. Coronation Street.
Oh, oh damn, my God.
Well done. Straight in.
That was one.
No flies on you, man. That was exceptional.
So iconic, right?
Yeah. If a little bit nerdy, but man, I'm impressed.
Not one of the best theme songs of all time, I've got to put on the record.
You know, one of the biggest regrets of my life, I used to be able to go on tour to Coronation Street.
Okay.
Because, you know, they've got a real sort of outdoor set. Mm. Okay, we've got a gramophone back moving...
then. Yes.
Cranking it up. We're now moving to the 70s. This was bear with me while I cue it up. This was a Australian soap which broke records in its time for its longevity. But it also was well known for never winning any sort of TV award whatsoever.
Cop Shop.
Incorrect.
Division 4.
Incorrect.
Oh. Clearly not number 96.
Homicide.
Incorrect. No, no, no.
That's two losses, Dan. You're now behind again.
Oh, shit.
I forgot that you kept losing two each time.
Okay, everyone got that wrong. It was the Young Doctors.
Oh, come on.
Oh, my God. You know when you said has never won a Logie, the first thing I thought was the Young Doctors, and it sounded like a cop show when it came
out. It did sound like a cop show. That's where I was.
But they used to fly around, didn't they?
It was the ambulance siren, I think. Sorry, guys. I feel bad about that.
Don't. Dan got it wrong twice.
I'm probably on zero right now.
Dan got it wrong twice. Malk, you had two.
I got it wrong
though.
Once. I only said cop shop.
Yeah, no, it was... Malk only said
I said
one.
Number 96.
Who said... okay, all right. No, someone else...
Someone said Division 4
Joe,
or something.
I said two. I did two.
So then everyone else just said one, right?
I should have got that.
You should.
Let's angry at myself.
Burst into the 1980s. Mm-hmm.
Come on, friends. Come on.
A program that needs no introduction to at least one of you.
Blue Hills.
Incorrect. Come on, Joe.
Bang on about
it.
Oh, that's not the Young Riders, is it? Yes. It was a bit blurry. Well, I didn't have the boys storming towards me on the horses, the Pony Express. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Brookie. That was for me.
Right.
Did you find a version?
What a setup. What a scam.
He knew I'd be losing.
I did find it. Okay. Whilst we're on a bit of a rewind binge, here's another show that featured very prominently in our rewind segment to, I hate to say, Joe, even more acclaim than the Young Riders got. Okay, now listen up closely.
24.
I'm calling that a tie, boys. That was very well done.
And they were perfectly in unison.
They were.
Okay. So Malk and I even now.
Malk
I'm getting stressed.
Malk is effectively in this your minus 10. And no, Dan, you're zero.
Dan, you're ahead. This might be yours.
In this round, you're... Yeah, and Joe is zero as well at this point. Does that make sense?
So overall, you and I are even, Dan.
Overall, yeah, we're even. Yeah.
Oh, don't tell me I'm going to need a fracking tiebreaker.
I'm very anxious.
We've got the 10s and we've got the 20s.
Okay.
So, all right. This has also featured on our podcast.
Oh, don't do this.
I know. It's okay.
Is this
I
the
can see
murder
it.
One? Oh. Murder. Why women kill?
Why women kill?
Murder. Dad got it.
Frank Sinatra. Well, sounds like Frank Sinatra. Is very, very good song.
Now, I'm a bit worried about this last one because it's a bit tricky.
Okay. I'm not going to say anything unless I know. Cause...
Okay. It's a Netflix original documentary. Can you hear that?
Yep.
Yeah, I think I know what it is, but I don't want to say anything in case I'm wrong.
It's on. It's on me. I either say something or I don't say something, right? And Dan wins or we tie.
Ouch! I think you need to.
You've got to go for it. Yeah, yeah. You've got to at least.
Look, I'm going to say it's The Social Dilemma.
Oh, incorrect! It was Jeffrey Epstein, Filthy Rich.
Oh, come on! Well done, Dan.
Oh, Dan.
Wins.
It only took three quizzes for Dan to win.
Oh, I know. The dunce of the class, finally.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. I'm going to cry.
Amazing.
Thank you. And do you know what's lovely? It means we've won one each.
Yes.
So I must have cheated. No more quizzes.
Fair and equal here.
No more quizzes. Yeah.
All right, Vicky, thank you for that. And I know a lot of hard work goes into that. It's always a lot of fun. Amazing. So thank you
Such
so
a good
much.
Job.
Great way to celebrate a 30th episode, but that does bring us to the end of this 30th episode. A huge thanks, as always, to our binge boxers, Malk, Joe, and Brookie. Where can we find you on the socials, Malk?
I'm at Steve Malk, everywhere that you care to follow me at. Do continue to rate us 5 stars and give us a lovely review on the places that you listen to us, particularly on iTunes. Thank you so much to Adrian Messenger for his excellent review. As much as anything, thanking us for mentioning him last episode. So I guess we'll get another review out of him.
And I love the X-Files.
Works well.
Easy. Okay, you can follow my laundry, Reno, and my cleaning.
I'm enjoying
this
week. I love
it. Wait till I get the juice bottle out.
Yeah.
It's a new thing. At Joe Casamento1 on Instagram. I'm just going to leave it there. Just head to that one. I can only cope with one platform at the moment.
We will. All right, and Brookie?
I'm at Bycount Brookie, and do leave us a review if that takes your fancy.
Please do. And I'm at Dan M. Bennett on Twitter and _ Dan M. Bennett on Instagram. Thanks to everyone for listening. We look forward to your company again next week. Until then, we are out. Bye.